Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just listened to the debut of our new programming, Jackie Patru, and I'm sure that you were, or must have been, impressed. We now have 4 regular broadcasts on the Freedom Radio Network, Monday through Friday night. Monday through Thursday night, beginning at 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 Mountain, 8 Central, and 9 Eastern, is Jackie Patru, followed directly by the Hour of the Time, which is Monday through Thursday, 7 to 9 Pacific. On Friday night, from 6 to 8 is Friday Night Live, followed by 1 hour of the Hour of the Time. And Monday through Friday night, immediately following the Hour of the Time, ladies and gentlemen, is Quest for Help with Michael Cottingham. Any or all of this broadcasting may be rebroadcast by any radio station anywhere in the world, as long as the broadcasts are not edited or censored in any way, shape, or form. No permission is necessary from this network. We are currently rebroadcast by approximately 140 low-power FM stations nationwide. Stay tuned for the Hour of the Time.
To the Hour of the Time, I'm Pooh.
And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
In his book, The Gulag Archipelago, Alexander Solzhenitsyn said this, and I quote, "And how we burned in the labor camps later, thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family? or if people had not simply sat there, paling with terror, but had understood that they had nothing left to lose and had boldly set up an ambush of a half dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever was else was at hand, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt. If we didn't love freedom enough, we purely and simply deserve everything that happened afterward. End quote. Why am I reading this quote to you tonight, ladies and gentlemen? Very simply because another piece of the freedom that Americans have traditionally enjoyed throughout their history has just been taken away. And you say, you say, will you, that hey, we need this kind of legislation. We need this kind of legislation because it's good legislation. I say you've lost your minds. Because what appears to be good legislation to the sheeple of the world is in reality tyranny to those who love, appreciate, and understand freedom, liberty, responsibility. Words have meaning, ladies and gentlemen, and the meaning that you attribute to those words in your everyday, ordinary sheeple life is not the meaning that those words possess under the law. Every American should have a copy of Black's Law Dictionary, and every American should press, whenever legislation is introduced to the Congress, should press for a complete copy of the proposed legislation and look up every word in Black's Law Dictionary. For what you perceive is reality is very often fiction. And the reality that underlies that fiction is terrifying. And thus, the recently passed domestic confiscation bill, roadblock gun ban, etc., is tyranny, ladies and gentlemen, and will begin a reign of terror that Americans will never forget. For as long as there are men on this earth who can remember. The omnibus spending bill was just recently passed, ladies and gentlemen, and the Congress sent President Clinton several gun control provisions as part of it. He signed the bill. Late Monday night, September the 30th, after both houses had overwhelmingly passed this legislation. In the House, it was passed 370-37, and in the Senate, 84-15. The communists who have infiltrated and taken over our government have succeeded in passing several amendments in the name of defending women and children. But despite this high and mighty, benevolent, altruistic rhetoric, these provisions will not accomplish what was claimed, and in fact, shred the Bill of Rights into a million little pieces. For without the second article and amendment, none of the other rights can be protected, ladies and gentlemen. Mao Zedong stated, and he was absolutely correct, all power emanates from the barrel of a gun. Those without a gun are without power. Listen to me very carefully. The founding fathers gave us the second article in amendment to protect all else. Those of you who have never read the preamble to the Bill of Rights will not understand that the Bill of Rights was created because the states did not trust the federal government not to become a tyrant without those additional protections of the individual rights of Americans. Rights that were not granted by government, but granted by the Creator. They felt, they knew, they understood that without further protections other than that outlined within the Constitution itself, the American people were in danger of becoming enslaved again. And since then, those who would enslave the world have mounted a campaign that is never ending to destroy that preamble and those Bill of Rights in order that the Constitution itself may be taken down, dismantled, scattered to the four winds, and their dream of a one-world totalitarian socialist government may become reality. The bill was H.R. 3610 in the House, and it contained a roadblock gun ban, which was Section 657 of the Treasury postal portion, which I'm sure that none of you ever read. Section A of Section 657, or I should say Paragraph A of Section 657, sets up thousands of gun ban zones across roads statewide where local police or the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms can arrest unsuspecting drivers who have a firearm in the car. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. If arrested and convicted, you will face 5 years in prison. Even if state law says that you can carry a weapon, a pistol, a rifle, even if state law says that the pistol rifle can be loaded as long as it is in full view, even if you have a carry permit, even if you have a concealed carry permit, unless the weapon is locked in a case, separated completely with the ammunition, locked up somewhere else, you will be arrested, charged, and face 5 years in prison. And nobody knows where these gun ban zones are located. You can be stopped without reason, without probable cause, at any time while driving in your automobile or walking, and searched for weapons. Of course, your weapons will be confiscated and will never be returned to you. Also known as the Kohl Amendment, spelled K-O-H-L, this provision reenacts the school zone gun ban law ruled unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court last year in U.S. versus Lopez. This provision, ladies and gentlemen, creates gun ban zones nearly 1/2 mile in diameter around every school in the country. Even if you do not know that there is a school there and you drive through this 1/2 mile radius gun ban zone, you can be arrested, charged, and if found guilty of just having, there is nothing to defend yourself against, ladies and gentlemen, if there is a gun in your automobile or on your person, whether you're walking or driving or riding a bus. So theoretically, you could be in a helicopter overhead and be within that 1/2 mile zone, although I'm stretching it there. It applies to police officers also, ladies and gentlemen. There is no exemption for law enforcement. 5 years in prison. Anyone without a pistol carry license or a concealed carry permit driving through a zone with an unloaded firearm that is not in a locked container or rack faces 5 years in prison. It applies even to off-duty police officers, despite ineptly crafted exceptions in the Cole language. Many of us who were previously able to drive freely with guns, either in plain view or in the glove compartment, can now be victimized by anti-gun local police and our Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms agents, even though they have no jurisdiction within the states. And there's more. You see, because of the way school is defined in Title 18 of the United States Code, the school's own gun ban could outlaw the possession of firearms by parents who homeschool their children. And any person who lives within the gun ban zone around any school who wants to go hunting would have to leap through a legal labyrinth. For you could not carry your weapon to a car parked on the street unless it was determined that such action was approved by school officials. The schools are run by National Education Association members. They are ingrained in the Marxist communist doctrine. Socialism prevails. Do you really believe they're going to give you permission? Not only to carry your weapon out of your home to your car to go hunting, but then you have to drive through the zone and risk being stopped. And now they know you have a weapon in your home. And soon afterward, someone will show up to confiscate it. Section 658 of the Treasury Postal Portion of H.R. 3610 contains the so-called domestic confiscation provision. It is carried over and contained in Senate 1632. Senate 1632. This was put forth by anti-gun senators Dianne Feinstein and Edward Kennedy. These were merged, by the way, and it's all of them are in the legislation signed by the president. It is the largest wholesale firearms confiscation victory in the history of this nation. It bans millions of Americans from owning firearms for life and orders that their weapons be seized. For right now, ladies and gentlemen, they say this gun ban only applies to domestic dispute misdemeanors. But you see, it sets a very bad precedent, since previously only felons have been stripped of their rights. Now, people guilty of misdemeanors, or who have been found guilty of misdemeanors, whether they were guilty or not, or who were forced to plead guilty to a misdemeanor, even though they may not have been guilty, just to get through the system and get it behind them. And even people who legitimately were convicted of misdemeanors. If the misdemeanor conviction was for a domestic dispute of any kind. They say it's domestic violence, but the law now defines domestic violence as a verbal confrontation. They call it verbal abuse, verbal violence, emotional abuse, and of course, physical violence is included. But your wife does not have to hit you to be convicted of domestic violence. You see, I've turned this around a little bit. It applies to everyone who is convicted of taking part in any domestic dispute which in any state is described as domestic violence, whether it's verbal, emotional, or physical. All of you who thought that only people guilty of beating their spouses, whether male or female, are beating their children in an abusive manner would be affected by this are mistaken. For in many states, counties, and cities, the definition of domestic violence is verbal abuse, emotional abuse. If you just yell at your spouse and your spouse calls the police in a moment of weakness, you are doomed. This provision, which passed the Congress, threatens to disarm the very women that it is supposed to help. And forget this politically correct bullshit that it's always the women who are abused. Many men are abused by women, both verbally, emotionally, and in addition, some are abused physically. And for those of you who belong to minorities who thought that you would escape this because of your minority status, you are not exempt. And the most physical, emotional, and verbal abuse occurs, ladies and gentlemen, despite what you have been brainwashed to believe, in minority families. The provision would impose a lifetime gun ban on anyone who has been convicted of using or attempting to use. Note I say attempting to use physical force in a domestic situation. Of course, this use of force language can cover anyone, both men and women, who gets involved in a little spat between spouses, roommates, lovers, etc. And what do you want to bet? The definition of domestic will be extended to quarrels at work, quarrels in the military, quarrels between two longshoremen on the pier. And I wonder how many police officers will be disarmed because of this. Because of the stress connected with law enforcement work, many, many police officers have been found guilty of domestic violence. And because they do not tend to marry weak, wimpy women, many wives of police officers are also guilty of domestic violence. And it was reported not too long ago that Hillary Clinton threw a lamp at her husband in the White House. Therefore, under this bill, Hillary Clinton could be convicted of domestic violence, and her right to own a firearm could be taken away forever. But I don't think she really cares, do you? You see, this will not only affect women who might throw a lamp at their spouse, will also endanger parents who spank their children. If you spank your child and your child goes to school the next morning and tells the teacher that the child was spanked, you can be convicted of domestic violence. Parents convicted of a domestic misdemeanor for spanking will now have to forfeit their right to keep and bear arms or else become felons for being a prohibited person in possession of a firearm. And once convicted of a felony, ladies and gentlemen, you could find yourself in a hardcore prison for many, many years. This provision federalizes a state issue and is clearly unconstitutional under the Second and Tenth Amendments, just for starters. If an act, ladies and gentlemen, of domestic violence is serious enough to lose your civil right to own guns, This is the way they categorize it. The fact is, it is not a civil right at all, but a creator-endowed right. For man is entitled to defend himself against any person, anything, any government, any tyrant who would enslave him or her. It is a creator-endowed right, protected by the Constitution for the United States of America and the first 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights. But if it's serious enough to lose your right to own guns, then it should be a felony and not a misdemeanor. And felons are already prohibited from owning firearms. If it is not serious, it should be treated as a misdemeanor, a penalty which historically has not forced one to forfeit his or her creator-endowed rights protected by the Constitution. And if they're creator-endowed rights, how can anyone lose them for any reason? We have been robbed, ladies and gentlemen. And there's more to this, much, much more. Much more that I haven't even begun to discuss. Dianne Feinstein. Schumer from New York. The House vote was 370-37. Only 37 representatives voted against this. Besides the gun bans that I have already discussed, the gun ban zones, the ban zones around schools, the domestic violence gun ban, despite those, they also threw in the study on placing taggants in black and smokeless powders, a provision which had previously stalled in the Congress. My source is Section 113, Paragraph 2 of the General Provisions of the Justice Department title in H.R. 3610. The bill also gives, ladies and gentlemen, listen to this, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms a pay increase of almost $100 million for next year. These Nazi jackbooted thugs are being rewarded for the Waco massacre, the murder of Vicki Weaver at Ruby Ridge, and many other atrocities that they have committed throughout this country. They're being rewarded with a pay increase of almost $100 million just for the next year. $16 million in the regular budget plus an additional $66 million for anti-terrorism efforts. The source for this is Titles 1 and Title 7 of the Treasury Postal Provisions. The Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. Swiss America Trading, ladies and gentlemen, specializes in real money. Non-reportable, non-confiscatable hard assets in the form of gold, silver, platinum, bullion, and coins from just about every nation that you can think of. They believe that it is necessary for Americans to own real money in order to resist the tyranny that is sure to come. One of the planks of the Marxist Communist Manifesto is the elimination of the middle class. And the only way that that can be accomplished, ladies and gentlemen, is through a complete collapse of the economy as we know it, and a redistribution of wealth, which is one of the other planks of the Communist Manifesto. These are just about the only two planks that have not been implemented and are not yet at work in this country, aside from the disarmament of all people everywhere. But if you have noticed, over the last 15 years, the middle class has been put under tremendous financial stress. Where the family could survive and live very well with only one spouse working and the other in the home to take care of the children, now both spouses must work and some of the elder children must work in order just to make ends meet, just to keep the home. And the younger children, ladies and gentlemen, are in government-controlled daycare centers learning how to live in the New World Order, being brainwashed by the National Education Association, Marxist socialist teachers who are destroying the minds of the next generation. If you would like to get your hands on some real money, if you would like to help preserve what you have spent your life accumulating, I suggest you call Swiss America Trading right now. Don't wait. Call now. If no one answers, leave your name and phone number and someone will get back to you. Ask for a copy of the latest newsletter. Make sure, ladies and gentlemen, that you thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time and for their financial backing of the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Explore the possibilities of getting your hands on some real money. 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-BUY-COIN. Do it now. If you're going to call this broadcast, you had better be willing to hold on the line. H.R. 3610 continues the language included in the previous year's budget prohibiting the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms from investigating or acting upon applications for relief from federal firearms disabilities. What this means is that non-violent offenders who lose their gun rights won't be getting them restored anytime soon. Again, the source is Title I of the Treasury Postal Provisions. And this so-called digital telephony provision threatens the privacy of gun owners. And you can find this in Section 110 of Commerce State Justice Provisions. The funding in this provision will be used to force telephone companies to retrofit existing telephone equipment in order to facilitate the ability of government officials to wiretap citizens. It would be similar to requiring home builders to put microphones in walls of every home so that the Federal Bureau of Investigation could more easily eavesdrop on conversations. Of course, the FBI must first submit an implementation plan before spending the $60 million for these technological improvements, but what do you want to bet? It will be improved on its first submission. There's also a part of the bill that was a provision in the Labor HHS section containing a prohibition on the CDC's ability to spend any funds to advocate or promote gun control. But despite this apparent victory, there are still two problems with this and other language in the budget. First, the department which conducts the anti-gun studies did not receive a pay cut. Second, the so-called prohibition in this provision only prevents the CDC from actually lobbying in favor of gun control. So as long as the CDC does not call for any gun bans, waiting periods, etc., this prohibition will not prevent them from placing the same anti-gun studies in medical journals, the very same studies which are always used by the media and Handgun Control Incorporated to impugn our right to keep and bear arms. You can find that in Title II of the Labor HHS provisions. A militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I wonder what it is about that protection of a basic right of the people to defend themselves against tyranny cannot be understood. You see, I don't think it's anything. I think that it is intentionally not understood by those who wish to enslave humankind once again. It was reported in the Washington Post on November the 19th, 1992, how a school teacher was arrested in class after a pedestrian reported seeing her handgun sitting in open view on the seat of her car in the parking lot. This lady, this school teacher, had no record and was, except for a school zone gun ban, which was later ruled unconstitutional, complying with Virginia law, which allows citizens to carry a firearm in their car without a permit as long as the gun is left in plain view. I want to thank Roger D. Cravens for his reporting on this issue. A militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. How many of you learned how to diagram a sentence in school? Probably nobody under the age of 40. Since they don't do those things anymore in school, I don't know when they stopped it, but they have in many public schools. A militia being necessary to the security of a free state is a descriptive clause. A descriptive clause. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed is the active clause and is clearly understood. The people, according to the Supreme Court, has always been held to mean all of the people all of the time. Does not apply to the National Guard, which is, by definition, not a militia. Even though in the law it is included in a category of militia, it is clearly not the militia described by the Constitution for the United States of America, which clearly states and recognizes that the militia existed prior to the writing of the Constitution. You see, it does not give Congress the power to create a militia, but gives them the right to call forth the militia, and specifically states what they can be called forth for: to suppress insurrection, repel invasion, and execute the laws of the Union, and for nothing else, ladies and gentlemen, nothing else whatsoever. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill. How you doing?
Good.
I think a lot of people are probably missing the most important part of this, and that is that the federal government has no jurisdiction within the scope of the amendments at all.
That's correct, and no jurisdiction whatsoever within the states.
That's correct.
Except where it directly pertains to interstate commerce.
Right, or counterfeiting anything listed in Article 1, Section 8.
That's correct.
Now, I know that you know this, but a lot of your listeners may not. If they would like to do a little research, go down to your local law library and pull out any one of the 50 codes of the United States Code. But make sure you get the code books written by the United States government, because they're the only ones that reflect it. And if you will notice, if you turn to page 3, there are the 50 codes are listed. 20 of them you will see a little asterisk by. If you look at the bottom of the page, it says these titles have been enacted into law. Only 20 of the 50 have ever been enacted into law. Why? Because they were done on House bills. A House bill becomes a law because it coincides with Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. When something is a House resolution, a resolution is not a law. Black's Law Dictionary defines resolution in legislative practice as such. The term is usually employed to denote adoption of a motion, the subject matter of which would not properly constitute a statute, such as a mere expression of opinion. So anytime they have a House resolution, it is merely their opinion. The only place a resolution has force in law is in the 10-mile square of Washington, D.C., and there are states like San Juan and Puerto Rico, but has no effect in law in the state.
You're absolutely correct.
Well, I know a lot of your listeners didn't know that, and what really kind of burns me is...
Only the ones who haven't been listening for the last 4.5 years. and there probably are quite a few of those.
Well, what it comes down to is when the Senator of the Congress, and every Senator and Congressman knows the House resolution has no jurisdiction within the states, when they take it to your state government to enforce it on the people, they are committing a fraud. When your state government, in turn, goes along with this that is unenforceable in the state and enforces it against the people, they join conspiracy to commit fraud. Fraud is a felony. Felons belong in jail.
That's correct. And in the federal attorney's guide, which is a book, in actuality, it's the United States Attorney's handbook, it states that acts of Congress do not apply to state citizens.
Correct. And the thing is that they have been doing this to us over and over and over. Every senator, every congressman, every state assemblyman, every state senator is guilty of either fraud or conspiracy to commit fraud. I think it's about time we go to our local sheriff to explain these facts. And the real felons in this world, the ones who wear the 3-piece suits and carry the briefcases, I think it's time for them to go to jail.
I think so, too, but I have to tell you that not all of them are guilty. You see, they're no different than us. Just because we elect somebody from our hometown to go to Washington and serve as a senator or a member of the House of Representatives does not confer upon them any more knowledge than they had before they were elected. We were sheeple most of our lives, and so are they. We take for granted all of these things, and nobody really understands it or knows it until they get in the books and begin to do research and study and do not accept anyone's word anymore.
Well, I think they're defrauding their job position in the beginning. Number one, they're supposed to be a representative. I'd like to know how many people out there have actually spoke to their representative. You can call his office or her office, and you'll get some neophyte on Prozac to talk to you. Or you'll send them a letter, and you'll get a nice warm letter back with their name stamped on it. you as a constituent never get to talk to your representative. So how can they even call themselves a representative if they don't talk to the people that they're supposed to be representing?
Well, they're not. And what began as a very readily understood contract between the people and the representatives that they send to Congress, you realize that in the beginning, of course, the senators were appointed by the state legislatures.
Correct.
And that has been changed in order to help destroy the republic and create their socialist democracy. And now the people elect the senators also.
But
nobody knows who these people are. Nobody gives them a test. Most of these people we send to Congress have never read the Constitution, don't know what it says, and could care less. They're looking for a way to earn an easy living for the rest of their life, and they're usually put there or put up for election by special interest groups who have promised them quite a bit of money on the side or upon retirement if they go to Washington and do their bidding. And that's really how the system works now.
Well, exactly, and I'm sure that is why they took the senators out of being appointed by the states and put it back into the hands of the people. Apparently, they sold the people on the idea that you should elect your senators just so that they could stack the deck with both Republican and Democrat candidates.
That's correct. The original purpose of our founding fathers, of the states appointing the senators, the state legislatures appointing the senators, was to maintain the sovereignty of the state. The senators would be a check and balance against the foolishness of the people.
Exactly, the way that California's been hurt in the job market, the way Texas has been hurt in the beef market, and the way that Florida's been hurt in the tomato market and in the orange market. Had the senators been appointed by the states, things like NAFTA and GATT would have never passed.
That is absolutely 100% correct. And now, and I should have said, to protect the sovereignty of the state against the foolishness of the sheeple. Now the sheeple vote for both the representatives and the senators. The senators owe no allegiance to the state. And are thus ripe for the buying of whoever's got the most money.
And unfortunately, Bill, you're 100% correct. Hey, got a super good show going tonight. Enjoyed listening to you.
Thank you, sir.
See you later.
Thank you for calling. The number, by the way, for anybody who would like to call is 520-333-4578. The truth is, ladies and gentlemen, if you watched the debate Sunday night between Bill Clinton and Bob Dole, the truth is there's not a dime's bit of difference between them. They are good friends. They are both going to propel us into the New World Order. Bill Clinton happens to be a communist. Bob Dole happens to be a Nazi. And it doesn't matter who you elect, you're going to get the same end result, the enslavement of the American people. They didn't talk about any real issues. They beat around the bush, complimented each other, pretended to have some sort of discrepancy on certain issues, but when hard pressed, neither one would actually tell the truth about the other or really attack the other. They were playing, ladies and gentlemen, handball with foam rubber balls, and they weren't bouncing anywhere. It was a con job, big con job. Most of the sheeple sat there and just sucked it up. Just sucked it up. And I'm going to tell you that I stand by my previous announcement that Bob Dole hasn't got a prayer. Hasn't got a prayer. And if you watch that debate, you know why. Bill Clinton shone. Everything he said was a lie, but he shone. If you were a sheeple, you would have loved it. Bob Dole looked ill at ease. He looked nervous. His hand shook when he picked up his glass of water. He stumbled and stuttered on words. He was definitely not presidential material. Bill Clinton isn't either, but he looked like it. He gave the impression that he was. And that is the only thing that most sheeple consider when they vote is, how did he look? How did he sound? Do I like him? Did he smile? Is he handsome? Is he cute? Some women would vote for him if the camera would just spend 2 seconds on his butt. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. This is Richard in Atascadero.
Hello, Richard.
California. You know, I have a comment about last night's charade. It occurred to me, I saw somewhere that, you know, I don't know what it was, but it was, anyhow, the comment was made that, you know, in the debate, the slogan was, don't look mean and don't babble. Okay. Well, did you see the feeds before it went on the air?
No. I seldom have time to spend much time.
Well, I watched the feeds. I don't even remember what satellite it was on. There's so much of that stuff around there. You know, it was everywhere. But I watched the KU band feed before it was actually on the air, where Lehrer came out and did his spiel for the audience and told them how they better not say anything, and they better not clap, and they better not boo, and they better not do anything, or else he was going to embarrass them. And they had all these people. Anyhow, that was the coaching that the audience got. They were told to keep quiet.
Oh, sure.
And understandably, actually. So
All television audiences are always controlled. They're told when to laugh. They hold up signs. They laugh, applaud, be quiet.
I understand.
Sit down, stand up.
That's not exactly what the point I was going to make, but that was kind of a lead-in. What I did note, and I don't know if you noticed, that when Dole walked up to the podium and Clinton walked up to the podium, Dole sat there with this very kind of a scowl, looking down at his podium, didn't smile. You know, when he's out in front of the cameras, wherever he is campaigning, he's all smiles and Mr. Jovial candidate. He walked out there last night, he was frowning, he was, I would describe it as kind of a scowl, looking down at his podium, never looked up at the audience, never acknowledged Clinton, never acknowledged anybody until, you know, he was directly spoken to by Lehrer. And it almost looked to me like, and I don't know, maybe I'm reading something into it that isn't there, but it looked to me like,
well,
the shining boy with the bright lights, you know, it looked like even the lights were brighter on Mr. Clinton. And
yeah, that's true. It really did look like the lights were brighter on Clinton, and that that Dole was sort of cast in a shadow.
Well, the lighting was such that you know how you can play a game. You're a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you can do lighting, and you can show shadows.
Oh yes.
And wrinkles.
Yes, you can make some.
And Dole looked haggard, tired. I think with lighting, more than anything. The guy's an old man, all right, but he's, you know, he always looks good when he's out on the campaign trail, but that night with all the studio lighting...
That's a matter of opinion. I've never thought Dole looks good. I think he's as stilted or more so than the vice president.
Well...
And I think he's stiff. I don't think he's ever sincere when he talks. I've never heard him sound sincere. He says what he thinks people want to hear.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I've never seen him when he looked natural and good at all.
I think last night was a very, very, to me, of course, being somewhat biased, looked to me like the shadow was cast on him, and it was fairly obvious to me, and I may be reading more into it than is there, but it looked to me like Mr. Clinton was getting the major pitch, and of course all the media gave him the...
Oh, I'm sure he was. Did you see how Dole backed away from some issues, and where he'd attacked Clinton before? He was almost like apologetic and denying that he had ever said such things.
Oh, and how they're such friends, and how they respect each other.
Yeah, and did you also notice how after he said at the Republican National Convention that he was going to do away with the World Trade Organization last night, he was very proud of the fact that he had backed NAFTA and GATT along with Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And made a great statement about how he had done that.
I have said for...
He is a liar. He is a liar. He is a Trojan horse. He doesn't give a damn about the Constitution, and neither does Bill Clinton.
Okay.
We're going to take this country down the tubes, but Clinton is going to have a second term.
Well, there's no question in my mind now. There was a year ago. I would have argued that point a year ago. I would have said with all the crap coming down about him that it's going to kill him.
No way. That just keeps everybody chasing their tails. not paying attention to the real things that need to be paid attention to.
And I even know someone who says, well, he's got to be a wonderful man or they wouldn't be picking on him so bad.
Well, there is some legitimacy for that kind of a statement. My grandfather told me when I was a young boy, he said, son, if you don't have a lot of enemies when you die, you never did anything right.
Yeah, that could be.
And that's the truth.
Well, it's very obvious to me. I would, if I were a betting person, I'd put my money on Clinton and buckle my seatbelt because we're in for a ride.
Well,
we're in for the e-ticket ride.
We're in on a ride. It's just going to get rougher. This country's going down. The American people are going to be disarmed.
Yep.
There's going to be a world totalitarian socialist government.
I have, and some of my relatives have been, in fact, one of my relatives in particular, who is now in his late 60s, and in somewhat failing health, but not too bad, you know, has been telling me for probably 25 years what you're telling us. And, you know, this guy dropped out of school when he was a freshman. In fact, they kicked him out of school when he was a freshman in high school. And basically, he's got an eighth grade education, was a very successful white collar worker for a very large newspaper in San Francisco. There's only two, and he was actually involved with both of them. The Chronicle actually was where he worked.
Oh, I'm well aware of the Chronicle.
Oh, yeah. And
the Chronicle reporters that got me almost killed when I tried to tell him some of the things that I had discovered when I was with the Office of Naval Intelligence after leaving the Navy.
He wasn't a newspaper type. He was, well, anyhow, I'm not going to elaborate anymore what he was, but he was a worker bee there, but he's a white-collar worker bee, but he was not a reporter or journalist. Anyway, he's been telling me for 25 years plus, basically what we're talking about now. And, you know, there's been a lot of people, you know, who have had their eyes wide open and knowing what's going on for a real long time. And I'm glad that you're out there trying to get more people woke up. And, you know, I don't have a whole lot more to add than that. I feel like I'm kind of babbling and talking in circles now. I think it's time to let somebody else talk. But
well, you're going to have to anyway, because we've got to go up for the network break here.
Oh, yeah, it is. Okay, see ya.
Take care. Thank you for calling.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know, you had better awaken, and you had better do it quickly. I've been trying to awaken you for many years now, and so have many other people. And I know that many of you in the beginning thought we were all crazy and told us as much to our faces, and then you began to see what we had predicted and what we had been telling you was coming true right before your eyes. And so you came back to us and became allies. The rest of you are still sleeping, and you had better wake up. The Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.